Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
Dr. Michael Fenster is a cardiologist, a gourmet chef, author, TV personality, and host of Code Delicious. Here's Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. You are listening to Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike. Make sure you check out where I'm at and what I'm doing on CardioChef.com. And right now, we are about to get into a little culinary CPR with my good friend and master chef, Luca Paris. Chef Paris is an amazing guy. He had to graduate at the top of his class for culinary school. We all know that. He's like totally rules Food Network. He's been on there, won Guy's Grocery Games. He goes around the country teaching folks how to cook. And in between that, he runs an award-winning restaurant in Keene, New Hampshire. He is the master. He does it all. My good friend, please welcome back to the program, Chef Luca Paris. Chef, thanks for being here once again.
What's up, big guy? I missed you last week and overtime, but I'm so excited about your recent show on the doctors. How cool are you? I just want to mention that's the coolest thing in the world. But let me tell you about today.
Thanks.
Today, what we're going to hit on two things. The first thing I want to talk to you about is that my wife, because I've kept talking about real salt, I'm listening to the ads and all this stuff that you have on your thing. I said, Lynn, you got to pick me up some real salt. So she went up online and got it. And I've been using the real kosher salt, the sea salt.
Oh, yeah, that's what I use too.
And I use kosher salt for all my cooking. If someone was going to ask me what
me
I
too.
Use for cooking, I'll always use kosher salt. But now I'm using that. Absolutely love it. I didn't even have to adjust too much my amount in there. Because, you know, once you get used to whatever salt you're using, you almost have to be careful when you switch to another one that the same amount might be a little too salty or not enough. I don't know. Sometimes that's happened to me. I've done it with just different brands of kosher salt. So I wasn't too far off, and
yeah.
I love it. It's perfect for me. So,
I think it's great. Oh, thanks. And one of the things I love about that is that, you know, it's sort of a mined product in that, you know, it's an evaporated ocean in Jurassic time. So that's, you know, several hundred million years ago. You
right.
didn't have to worry about, you know, oil slicks and so on and pollution and so on and so forth. And you're also getting all those trace elements, those trace minerals that I think are very important. So I love it. I've been using it for years and years, and I'm glad I finally could give something back to you because you've given me so much great, you know, cooking information over the years. And speaking of which, you came up with another recipe that I absolutely love because you actually married flavors from two hemispheres, which not everybody can do and do it as well as you have.
Well,
so we've got this, and correct me if I'm pronouncing it wrong, but I'm going to give it a try. Castelvetrano, olive tamponade crusted Chilean sea bass with yellow, red, and orange cherry tomato escabeche.
So
did I mangle it too bad? Did I say
no,
that?
You did it great. I'll go with you on what the pronunciation for escabeche. I've always called escabeche, but we'll go with whatever it is. And then it's Castelvetrano. But I got to tell you, man, this was
you
one
say
of
that
my,
so well.
This is one of my favorite dishes because first of all, let's jump. There's some big words here that really are throwing, you know, they make it sound good for you when you put it on the menu. There are three basic
yes.
concepts, and then I could charge more, you know, the whole thing. But
sure.
But really, it's a super simple dish. So first of all, when we talk about the tapenade, a traditional tapenade is the olives and the capers and in this case, I'm adding sun-dried tomatoes. But you would find anchovies, capers, olives, and that's your tapenade, which is very simple. But the Castelvetrano olives are these bright, briny, incredible olives that come from Italy that just ooze this. They're not overpowering. So if you do a Calamata tapenade, that's a heavy, almost dark. It tastes as dark as it looks. It almost kind of. You eat what you see.
And those, for folks, those are the dark black olives that you'll see. And really, a lot of the olives are defined by where they come from, as you're pointing out,
yep.
and also by how they are preserved. So you wouldn't want to eat necessarily a fresh olive. They're not very palatable. So,
no.
You know, some are brined, some are,
no.
are sun-dried, and then brined, and so forth. So where are these olives, you know, can the average person get these?
Yeah,
and
yeah, they're
if so, where?
They're becoming more and more popular. You'll see them on olive shelves, and they'll go by Castelvetrano. So whether it's a brand like Roland that's making its way into the market today, into the traditional supermarkets or whatever. But just take that word, and you could do a Google search today about it, Casa Vetrano, and you'll find little containers. That's how my wife found the real salt without having to go to the store. She was able to find it that way. And look for Casa Vetrano olives. Get them pitted so you don't have to do it, and they're absolutely perfect. So we'll take that word out of the equation. We're going to jump to escabeche. And traditionally, it's usually something marinating the item itself, whether it's a chicken, fish, pork. An escabeche would be something that it always has vinegar. It always marinates. So, yes, it could be done to vegetables as well, but when people say it, it's usually directed to those items like marinating the chicken overnight or the fish overnight. And it has different words or different phrasing or types, but it's done all around the world. This escabeche concept of pickling, whether it's pickling in a marinade and then cooking or pickling to the point where it's almost cooking itself, that's just a traditional way of cooking. So I kind of stole it to use it with my tomatoes. And basically I do, in essence, again, big word to say, I quick pickled my tomatoes to go underneath the fish. It sounds better, right?
It's very popular. Folks travel over to Europe. They'll see a lot of these dishes, particularly in Spain. And as you point out, they'll do it with a lot of different proteins, not just fish, but, you know, as you said, rabbit, pork, etc., chicken. And what I love, though, is you've taken sort of, and this to me is a very classic Mediterranean preparation. A method of cooking. You're using fresh. You're letting the ingredients speak. It's not overdone. There's no real heavy sauces. We're emphasizing the fresh quality. Yet you're using a whole lot of New World ingredients. I mean, tomatoes are New World, and then we're using Chilean sea bass, which we can talk about in a minute. And so it's just a beautiful marrying of Mediterranean approach to healthful eating, but utilizing New World flavors, and those are things that folks can readily and easily find in their supermarkets here in the States.
Exactly. And you mentioned the Chilean sea bass, which Chilean sea bass, it doesn't only pertain to, and I think you've written about it, and I'll let you talk about where you can get other places. It is a name brand that's now put on this horribly named fish, Patagonian toothfish, and that does not sell. So when they went to market it, they've talked about different, you know, they thought about different names for it, whether it's Pacific fish or this bass or that, and they landed on Chilean sea bass. Sounds pretty. It's had a negative connotation over the years because of overfishing and other issues, illegal stuff. So I understand that, but like I noticed that you wrote, and I'd love you to tell me about it more, is that you could actually get this same Patagonian toothfish or versions of it from across the world in more, I would say, legal areas or better farmed areas. Is that right?
Well, that's right. So there, for years, folks were told, you know, don't eat the Chilean sea bass. It's harvested illegally, kind of under the radar. You know, they're pushing it to the brink of extinction. And all of that was true. And so what I recommend for folks, they've really addressed this quite well. There's a Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources, and they work with what's called the Coalition of Legal Toothfish Operators, or COLTO. And about 90% of all the toothfish or Chilean sea bass that you find on the market now is overseen by these regulatory agencies. So they make sure that they do it the right way. They're not over harvesting, you know, et cetera. And so that is, I think, important when you're procuring your protein. You know, check with your fishmonger, make sure that it comes from a reputable source. You know, you're not really negatively impacting the environment and the ability for everyone else to enjoy it by, you know, getting a fish that was sort of done on the sly. And the very best places, there's two places from Australia, Heard and McDonald Islands, the Macquarie Islands, all of those in Australia, and then the Falklands, which are obviously, I believe, off the coast of Argentina. Yes, maybe exactly. Chile or Argentina, but somewhere out there. So those are kind of, according to the Monterey Aquarium and Seafood Watch, the best places to get your Sicilian cheap sea bass. So just ask your fishmonger. But what I also love about this recipe is you could use just about any fish. I mean, you could use, you know, regular sea bass, which is, exactly. by the way, folks, is completely different than Chilean sea bass. So for most recipes, you don't want to confuse the two. But I think any fresh fish that you could get, this worked great with salmon. What do you think?
The one thing I was going to go, you and I have talked about the Faroe Island salmon that we both love.
Yeah.
Now. And I would go right to this as a salmon dish because, you know, what you need for the fish is it needs to hold up because you're bringing in, even though they are lighter than the original versions of like a tomato and vinegar or pickled tomato and a tapenade, they still bring a lot of flavor. So you need the fish to be able to carry that through and have some body to it. And that's one of my favorite fish is the Patagonian toothfish, the sea bass, the Chilean sea bass. And I love the way it holds it. But I've tried it before with the salmon, and it's always been a big hit. People love having the tapenade on top and that brininess, the little bit of salt that really goes into the fattiness of the fish. And then you get this pickled vinegar, the sherry vinegar kind of waft that comes through, and you pop them all together, and it's out of control, the different layers of flavors. In a simple preparation.
So and folks, this is the kind of stuff where you really want to pay attention to the ingredients. You know, you're not using a whole lot of olive oil here, but you want to use the good stuff. The sherry vinegar, you want to get a good sherry vinegar because this is where you're really going to taste it. It's not going to be overwhelmed or it's not going to be cooked down and just added to, you know, a cooking liquid sort of situation. So this is when the couple extra dollars for the good stuff, I think, really makes a difference. You want to walk us through the tapenade, Chef, because this is such a great appetizer, and it's so versatile for so many different applications.
Oh, yeah, and I love it, and I'll use it for everything from a spread on a sandwich to crackers to a bruschetta. You name it, I'll put it there, and I absolutely love it. So basically, Costa Vetrano olives, 2 cups, 2 teaspoons of rinsed capers. You're going to get the capers that are in vinegar. You just rinse them off. Just get a little bit off of there. If you get the salted ones, same thing. Just rinse them off. Anchovies, 2 of them chopped. 1 lemon. You're going to use the zest only. Garlic, about a teaspoon diced. Sun-dried tomatoes, 1/3 cup diced. And I use the dry sun-dried tomatoes. I don't add it. You could get the ones in oil, but make sure it's a good oil. And a really good extra virgin olive oil. I use really good extra virgin olive oils like you talk about using finishing salts. The more expensive the olive oil is, the more you use it to finish cold preparations, salads, you know, quick dressings, things like that. You're not going to use this in pan frying, pan saute,
right.
or anything like that because you're just going to break it down and it's not worth what you're doing to it. Much like if you're using real salt and the marinated, the flavored salts and all that, you're going to use them as finishing salts versus using them in the dish. And in this case, we'll use kosher. But you just take the tapenade. In a standard blender, you add all the ingredients together, blend until it's smooth, place in a large bowl. Then the only ingredient we're not adding in is two, chopped sun-dried tomatoes and lemon zest. I want to fold those in because I want the sun-dried tomatoes to have a little bit of texture and not blend it in. And then I want the lemon zest to really pop at the end and stay fresh. And then the tapenade should resemble a light paste and not too soupy. Sometimes if you do it, if you refrigerate it overnight, it's going to hold together and solidify better. And these tapenades hold for up to weeks in your refrigerator. You put a little olive oil on top and just cover it tightly. You could use this on everything you want, on a piece of chicken. You throw it into – I've even taken it when I do a quick dressing for a salad. I pour the olive oil in, scoop a tapenade, and mix it together, a little of sherry wine vinegar, and now I have a dressing that has all these great flavors in there as well, too. So you got all that. And then we
talk about... I got to tell you, I use this stuff as part of a meal. It's like a little appetizer. You just put a little bit on some grilled bread.
Oh, perfect.
You know, yeah. take some nice ancient grain bread and just grill it up a little, maybe put a little salt and olive oil on that and put some of this tapenade on. And man, oh man, it is absolutely delicious. And one thing you talked about, the lemon zest, and folks, when we're zesting the lemon, we're just taking that skin off with a grater. You don't want to get the white stuff. So whenever you're zesting oranges or lemons or limes, you only want to use the colored stuff, that white stuff, the pith. It's really bitter, and you don't want to add that. It'll just pith off anyone who eats it. Sorry, couldn't resist the pun there.
Anyway, I almost don't know how to follow that. That was good.
We'll go right on to the escabeche.
All right. So because we need the pan, we're going to use the same pan. We're going to saute the fish in. So basically what we're doing is a quick pickle. I've done this so many times where the tomatoes and the sherry and the salt that I'm using kind of creates its own little moisture. The moisture comes out of the tomatoes, but it creates its own sauce. You notice I'm not doing this big, heavy sauce anywhere in here or adding anything to it. So we cook the fish, and then the tomatoes cook in the same pan. So basically it's heating a saute pan, medium-high heat. You put a teaspoon of olive oil, regular olive oil, blended oil, something you like. You like to know, you're a fan of what type of oil for cooking, Mike?
Oh, olive oil, for sure.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And you let it warm. Then you add the sea bass, and it's been seasoned with salt and pepper. And listen, generously seasoned. If you're using kosher salt and pepper, put a good amount of salt and pepper on there. You're going to realize if you just sprinkle a little bit, it's not going to be enough. Don't oversalt, but that's something you get used to after doing it.
And I'm going to add a little Japanese preparation. There, obviously, they use a lot of fish. And one of the tricks there is if you get this sort of the night before, or the morning of, before you cook, go ahead and put the salt on and let that salt work its way in as it sits, in the refrigerator before you bring it out. And it really, really, I think, brings all the flavors to the forefront. So that's a little Japanese technique. Maybe they use it in the Mediterranean. Do you do that, Luca?
Well, something I do here at the restaurant, I don't usually put in my recipes because I feel like it's an extra step they don't have to do. I love to brine all my fish. I'll do a quick 1 hour brine of salt and water with my fish before, and then pat them dry and make sure they're nice and dry for service. But if you're not making sure they're dry after that, you're not going to get your fish is just going to get sloppy. So I was taught once a long time ago about this whole brining, and I thought it was crazy. I said, "What do you need to do that?" But what you're doing is basically the same thing by adding the salt on. Early enough, it's going to absorb it, and it's basically self-brining because there's enough moisture in the fish that you don't have to do that. So,
and that's one of the things to keep your fish juicy when you cook it, because I don't know about you, but one of the travesties is when you go out and you see this beautiful piece of fish and it tastes like a cotton ball in your mouth.
It's the worst thing possible. I hate that.
I hate that
so
too.
So you're basically searing each side of the fish for 3 to 5 minutes. Depending on the size of the fish, one of the cool things about Chilean sea bass is it doesn't overcook tremendously. It'll cook all the way through. It's a beautiful fish, and you could cheat a little bit with that one. And then you remove it from the stove, and you're going to place it in an oven-proof pan, pop it in the oven, 250 degrees to keep it warm so you've actually prepared the escabeche. Now, and then we have to put the tapenade on top first. We'll put the tapenade on top. The fish, pop it in the oven. An escabeche is basically a simple preparation of pickled vegetables. In the same pan you cook the fish, take the remaining olive oil that we had, warm, medium, high heat, and we get the olive oil on there. Let it start heating it up. Now, here's where it gets good. You're going to add the tomatoes, and you can use plum tomatoes. You could do whatever. I love, for color, red, orange, yellow, cherry tomatoes, these teardrop ones, all the ones. And if you get some really great ones, at the farmer's market when that comes out.
Oh, yeah. You're talking.
And
now
you add a pinch of salt to the tomatoes. Now, why you do that? Because the salt is going to start extracting juices, open up the pores kind of the tomatoes. Now it's ready to suck up anything around it. That's when you hit it with a good sherry wine vinegar in the pan, and you just shut it off, and you just watch the tomatoes kind of get the vinegar inside of them and pickle themselves. And now you have the juice from the tomatoes and the sherry, you have the salt, you have the tomatoes themselves, and that becomes the base of your fish that goes on top. And when you take a bite and you go through the tapenade, you go through the fish and the tomatoes, you get what we talked about, those layers of salty brininess and the lemon zest, and then you have the beautiful fish, and then at the bottom you have this vinegar pop. It's I'm telling you, I love this dish more than anything I've ever cooked.
And we serve that with a wonderful light Italian wine because, hey, you don't want the tomatoes to be the only thing that's pickled. So real quick, Luca, thanks again for being here. Folks can find him on lucaparis.com. And you are listening to Radio MD with Dr. Mike.